Our next guest here in studio has experienced a lot of that as well. So much of that, he's actually decided to make a book about some of his tales. A gentleman simply known in these parts as Cleveland Tommy. He is the author of a new book called Affairs of a Street Savvy Cabbie. Tommy, thanks for coming on, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. It's great to be here. Life's an adventure or it's nothing.
Well, apparently you have witnessed and experienced a series of adventures. And, you know, when we have folks who have written books on with us in the past, they always talk about the process of putting the book together. I want to begin with that before we dive into some of these incredible tales that you've been a part of over the past quarter of a century. Give us an idea, because this isn't the first time you put a book together. You've been down this path before. How this is such a complicated and tough process and how that's kind of changed over the years.
Yes. Well, what's very interesting is in 1995, I decided to drive a yellow cab, and I decided to work nights, 9 at night to 9 in the morning, and I decided to work the radio calls. While other people were sitting at the airport and at the hotels, I was roaming the streets, and there was a lot of business back then, and I was going from call to call to call, picking up at bars, restaurants, hospitals, businesses, and so a lot of different things would happen, and during the day, I would, at the end of my shift, I'd do two rides out of the airport, and I would tell people my stories, and constantly they would say, you should write a book, you should write a book, you should write a book. So one day, I unplugged my TV, and back then, in 95, I had a PC, and I just decided I was going to write stories, and I used to jot notes down on a notepad. I didn't record things. And anyway, so I jot down these stories, and I sit in front of the PC, and I write them and rewrite them and rewrite them. And I come up with about maybe 30 stories, 40 stories. I go to Kinko's. I have a book made 8.5 by 11. And there's stories about drunks and panhandlers and female escorts and all kinds of wonderful people. And Rick the Pimp, one of my favorite. But anyway, Anyway, so I put 5 books for sale at the Cleveland State Bookstore on consignment, 5 at the Phoenix Coffee Shop. I go back a week later, they're gone. So now I make another copy of the book, and I'm adding stories as time goes by, and I get 50 made at Kinko's. I put them in a bookstore in Chagrin Falls, Solon, Coventry, Cleveland Heights, and so anyway, Visible Voice Books in Tremont, and I'm putting these books everywhere, and wherever I put them, they're selling. And so I'm submitting them to publishers. You have to submit a query letter. And, you know, before I wrote the book, I looked to see how many books were written by cab drivers, and there weren't that many. And the ones that were written by immigrants, and they talked more about getting their driver's license than the people they picked up. So anyway, I'm selling all these books, and publishers, I would send them a letter telling them, you know, how the books are selling and what makes the book unique. You know, it's the real deal, stories from the night. And they would say, sounds like a nice local book, but we're not interested. The name of the book was Affairs, F-A-R-E-S, of a Cleveland Cabbie. So these stories can happen anywhere, but nobody wanted to publish it. So I continued to self-publish. I had 1,000 made at Bookmasters. After I first asked Barnes & Nobles, I sent them the 8.5 by 11 copy, and they told me if I had it made in paperback, they'd be willing to put it in the stores. So back in 95, you had to have 1,000 made for $3,000. The book sold for $10. The bookstore and the distributor took $4. So $3 to make the book, $4 for the distributor and bookstore, and $3 for Cleveland Tommy. So anyway, I get 1,000 made, they put them in the stores, and they sell. I contact TV, radio, newspapers. I'm on Live on 5. I'm on Jeff Maynard Morning Show. I'm on radio, Cleveland Magazine, Scene Magazine. So I get all this publicity, and that's what's supposed to attract a publisher. And the local Cleveland publisher, if you got a local book, you want to contact Gray & Company. They're the Cleveland publisher. They do One Tank Trips by Neil Zurcher and Brown's Memories.
Neil used to be on the station.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love Neil? So anyway, Gray and Company wanted to publish the book, and they sat down with me, and I was excited. I impersonated a mailman, and I wanted to hand him the manuscript, the book in person. And I used to work for the post office years ago, so I wore a mail hat, and I rang the buzzer by the warehouse. They let me up. I hand them the book, and they go, "Who the hell are you? You're not the mailman." And I said, "Hey, just," I said, "I wanted to make sure you got the book." I said, "I'm sorry, you know." And he says, "Get out of here." Well, an hour later, they looked at the book. The stories are funny. They're real funny, and they're interesting, entertaining. And the first book, Affairs of a Cleveland Cabbie, also had 20 pages in back, places to go, things to do in Cleveland. So it was all about Cleveland. And I love Cleveland. Been loving Cleveland now 64 years. So anyway, they wanted to do 3 runs of 60,000 for Northeast Ohio and give me $1 a book. They wanted to get Durf from Scene Magazine to make a 1 cartoon picture for each story, because the stories are dialogue, 1 or 2 pages. Well, Durf wasn't interested, and they wanted me to rewrite it a certain way, and I couldn't figure out exactly what they wanted. I couldn't figure out the rewrite. And, you know, I was just baffled that I write something that sells out everywhere, and this paperback had a bright yellow cover with a picture of me introducing you to get in the cab. And it had a black checker border. I even had 50 copies placed at the airport. Try to do that with your book. I happened to talk to the right guy. They put it in the airport. So anyway, so I wrote a book that sold, and it didn't go anywhere. So here we are 20 years later. I'm giving a ride. I'm still driving around. Now I do my own business in a Lincoln Town Car. And I've been doing that 7 years. So this lady, I'm telling her about the book and the story, and she says, "You know, you should put it on Kindle." She goes, "It costs you nothing." She says, "I'll type it up for you." And I said, "Well, I'll pay you for that." She goes, "No." She says, "You know, I'll do it for you." So Betty types it up for me, and I add more stories to it, and I got stories from the past, stories from the present, and I put it on Kindle. And much to my surprise, I find today you can order 1 paperback book. Right now, you know, you can download it on the internet. It's on Kindle, Affairs of a Street Savvy Cabbie. But they also tell the author you can submit it, have it made in book form for $2.50. And you could have 1 printed. So that's where we came from.
And obviously, this book's got a lot of great tales in it. And it's fascinating because you mentioned a lot of different things in here. And this has over 100 true stories, some of which we can repeat on the air, many of which we can't, I imagine, at the same time. But that's okay, because you mentioned in here there are some stories that are mysteries. You have some adventure. You have some comedy. Let's start with comedy. What kinds of stories, and I don't want to give away the whole book, but you're to pick out a story that really kind of made you laugh as you were putting this together and you were retelling it, what would you say were some of your favorite comedic stories in this book?
Okay, I'm gonna fire some fast ones at you here. Okay, now this is in New York City. To give you an example, New York City had 60,000 taxis. Cleveland had 1,000 taxis. So here's what goes on in Cleveland. I'm downtown early morning sitting at a hotel, and they call for a cab in the warehouse district. So I pull up and I go to the guy, "Where are you going?" He says, "I'm not going anywhere." He says, "I'll give you $20 to jump my car. My battery's dead. I figure it's faster to get a cab to do it than AAA. And I said, "Okay." I get a call at 4 in the morning on West 25th and Clark at an apartment building. Guy comes out. I go, "Where are you going?" He says, "I'm not going anywhere. My friend never showed up. The couch is in the lobby. I'll give you $10 and a pop to help me carry it up the steps."
Pretty resourceful.
So yeah. I said, "Yeah, okay." I take a drunk home, an old man. He says to me after I pull in a driveway, "Hey, I'll give you $2 to bring in my garbage cans." So where I'm getting at here, in Cleveland, you need a babysitter, your house painted, your grass cut. Just call a taxi cab, you know.
Yeah. We'll help you bring your couch upstairs. Yeah, you know, we'll help you jump your car for you.
Yeah. I had a guy, I was driving a yellow cab minivan. We picked up a pool table. He was in one of the luxury apartments. We picked up a pool table, put it on top of the taxi, and I'm standing on top of an elevator to take this up to the penthouse. I'm riding an elevator with a pool table.
How'd you guys get it in there?
We had several people, four people carrying it, yeah.
Holy cow.
Him and his friends. This guy happened to be, his girlfriend was a porn star and she worked at Christie's, and I don't know what he did. Usually the boyfriend of a stripper knows the drug dealer, and that's all that matters, you know. So
connections, right?
Connections.
I'm sure you probably saw a little bit of that, and you still do see a little bit of that. I'm just leaving that out there. But you mentioned mysteries are a big part of the book as well. What are some of those mysterious stories that you experienced?
This is one of my favorites. I have a listing on the internet at Cleveland Airport Taxi, and I get a call, and I take credit cards with the square, and I get a phone call, and a guy says to me, I want to pay credit card by phone, Cleveland Airport to Chagrin Falls, and I want you to pick up a passenger. And I said, okay, fine. So he says, okay, I want you to be at the airport at 4:30 a.m., first plane that comes in from Vegas, and he says, I want you to pick up the black man with the silver briefcase. And I said, okay, fine. I go, what's his name and phone number so I can get a hold of him? You always want to have contact with the person you're picking up. So he says to me, you don't need to know his name and phone number. Just be at the airport at 4:30 in the morning. And now it's not busy, so you know I could park by baggage. And he says, just be there and pick up the black man with the silver briefcase. You know, I ran the credit card. You got your money. Just pick up the black man with the silver briefcase. So I go, okay, no problem. So, you know, I'm paid. I don't care. You know, hopefully I'll find him. Anyway, 4:30 in the morning, nothing going on at the airport. This one plane comes in. Here comes the black man with the silver briefcase. He's an older guy with a fedora, black rimmed glasses. He gets in the back seat. We're driving out to Chagrin Falls. I say to him, I said, you know, he says, what brings you to Cleveland? He says, well, I used to own four houses in Chagrin Falls. Now I own one. My son lives there. He says, I'm coming to visit my son. I said, have you ever been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? He goes, yeah, I'm still there. I'm Walter Williams. I'm with the OJs.
Holy cow.
And he says, I was inducted. And I said, oh, yeah, that's what I said. Holy cow. So a real nice guy. And but that was the black man with the silver briefcase. So, you know, the mystery.
Okay. So they, and now it all makes sense. They didn't want to tell you who he was because they figured you might make a bigger deal out of this. So that makes perfect sense.
See? Keep autograph seekers away.
Wow. Yeah,
they didn't want him to be mobbed at the airport, you know. And when I met him, this was, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago. He was 70 years old and getting ready to go on a European tour. And that Love Train's got a lot of miles on it. That was his number one hit. Everybody get on board Love Train, you know. So.
Wow. Very impressive. Well, and again, you have over 100 stories in this book, and there are all kinds of different tales in there. When you think about some of the famous people you picked up outside of the story you just told, any others come to mind?
I gave a short ride to Slash from Guns N' Roses and his girlfriend Perla. They had a Les Paul tribute for his 90th birthday at the Renaissance Hotel. And since then, they had a 100th birthday party in New York. But I picked up Slash and his girlfriend. I just took them from hotel to hotel. When NBA Weekend was here years ago, I was driving the yellow cab. And I picked up Mutombo at the Renaissance Hotel. And he gets in the cab and he says to me, are you with the NBA? Is this ride free? Because Cleveland had set up limousines for these guys for free transportation. And I looked at him and I said, no, I'm with the WCA. I'm with the working class of America. And by the way, a good tip is a down payment on a house. So
he probably could have afforded it, couldn't he? I mean, geez, oh man, we're talking about, I think it was 1997 when the NBA All-Star Game was last year. So yeah, he was making a pretty good chunk of change back then.
How's this for a ride? I get a call from Fahrenheit at night. I want you to pick three people up, take them back downtown. I pull up to Fahrenheit because some of these restaurants had my phone numbers. Who gets in the taxi? I'm in the minivan in the front seat. CeCe Sabathia behind me, Derek Jeter and Robbie Cano.
Wow.
This was the first year Sabathia had gone to the Yankees, and he had lost to a rookie pitcher that night, 1-0. And these three guys went to eat in Tremont at Fahrenheit. So anyway, they get in, and I look at them, and I always carry a baseball with me for, just in case something like this might happen. And I look at them, and I said, hey, the ride downtown is free if you'll sign my ball. And they look at each other, and they said, okay. So I get Sabathia, Jeter, and Cano to sign the ball.
Wow. Okay, so now I'm anxious to hear what those guys were like. Just because not everybody gets an opportunity to experience three larger-than-life personalities like that. And, you know, Derek Jeter isn't a very public guy. Even though he's been out in the public eye for quite some time, he's not the kind of guy you really hear about very much out of the street.
Well, I'm going to tell you what killed me. Sabathia is in the front seat, and Jeter says, "Where we go?" He goes, "Do you know a good place with the hot chicks?" And Sabathia looks at him, and he gives a sigh. He goes like this. Oh, remember, we're in Cleveland. And I said to myself, you son of a gun. You know, don't disrespect my city. Come on, there's stuff to do here, and there's plenty of hot chicks in Cleveland. So then, while I'm driving, I'm going from Tremont to West 6th Street. They were going to Bar Louie on the corner. And they're talking about Shaquille O'Neal's divorce.
Wow.
This is like 10 years ago. And that's, you know, that was the conversation. And I asked if I could take a picture when they were getting out. They said no. But now here's the customer service I had. I had some regular customers I had taken to the game that night. I called them up and I told them, go to Bar Louie if you want to party with Jeter, Sabathia, and Cano.
Wow.
And they went there and they razzed them and they got thrown out. But they got to do it. You know, they got to, I was the hookup guy, you know.
Did you put that story in the book? Is that in there?
It's right in the very beginning. Okay. I got a picture of the ball with the three signatures on it.
Okay.
But now here's where the story gets even better. I give the ball to my nephew, my brother's son. He's 13 years old because my brother Skip has bailed me out of all kinds of jams throughout the course of my life. You know, so he was my bail bondsman. So anyway, and it wasn't hardcore stuff, minor league, you know, stupid stuff. So anyway, I give his kid the ball, and my brother Skip is coaching his son Anthony, and so they got plenty of balls and bats. And when I give Anthony the ball, I said, do whatever you want with it. I said, I looked on the internet, it says with Jeter's name on it, the ball's worth $1,000, you know. Now, just to back up 1 second, they didn't give me any money, but I didn't care. But when I tell this story and the people say, well, did they pay you the $10? I said, no. I said, they gave me a $1,000 ball. Maybe it's more than that.
Right.
I said, I don't have a problem with that. So I give Anthony the ball, and what does he do? He comes running back, and he hands me two more balls and says, get some more.
As if that's an everyday occurrence, yeah.
The next year, the Yankees are in town, and here's a tip for you, because I know so much, you know. I know too much. I'm lucky I'm still alive. The Yankee pitchers like to eat at Mallorca before the game, and, you know, a Spanish-Portuguese restaurant. So anyway, I get a call from Mallorca the next year when the Yankees are in town. What do? I got the minivan. I pick up five Yankee pitchers, and I got a ball, and they actually ate before the game. Most of these players show up 2 hours before the game. So they ate way before the game, and I'm driving them, and when they get in, I said, hey, will you sign my ball? And they go, yeah, sure. So now I get five Yankee pitchers to sign the ball, and I give it to Anthony. But that was the last ball.
Wow. See, and now he thinks it's as simple as going to the grocery store to pick up a gallon of milk, right?
Oh, and wow. I see these people standing, you know, the players' gate is by the corner of Ontario and East 9th. People stand there for hours. The players used to all stay at the Marriott Hotel downtown. Now they're staying at somewhere else. But the people would stand outside for hours, you know, trying to get these autographs. And I picked up Cody Allen in Tremont a few years ago. I don't know if he still lives there, but there's some luxury lofts in the old Union Gospel building where Kipnis lived and Sabathia and Cody Allen. And the players like to go to the Barley House on West 6th. They got VIP rooms. And anyway, Cody Allen was going to the West 6th Street. And I asked him, I said, you know, what's the most important thing to remember in life? And he says, you got to forget your last pitch.
Fair
and
enough.
I said, well, I got that. You know, I forgot that.
Hey, that's all right. That's all right.
But, yeah.
Very good stuff. Well, Tommy, this is awesome, man. Thanks so much for coming here in studio. Again, the book, and this just hit me. I've been saying it wrong the whole time.
No.
Affairs of a Street Savvy Cabbie, A space, F-A-R-E-S, in quotations, Affairs of a Street Savvy Cabbie. And again, you're going to be January the 18th. That's a week from this Friday. You're launching this bad boy at Visible Voice Books. Very cool stuff. Tommy, this is fun, man. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, I really appreciate it, Andy. I had a great time. I look forward to being at Visible Voice Books. I'm going to be selling the book there for $5 if you come down. And stories, jokes, and yeah, just too many.
Hey, you know what? You can never have too many of those, man. This is a lot of fun. Make sure you check that out January 18th, and make sure you check it out as well. It's available on Kindle, right?
And it's available on Kindle. And remember, as you go through life, only one thing is certain. Nothing is certain.
Yes. Truer words have never been spoken, my friend. Awesome stuff. All right, we need to get
Thanks, Andy. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tommy.